Greetings. Welcome to a discussion about a worldwide organization of volunteers that helps people. I'm your host, Gray Jacket, and my guest is Niles Lavin. Niles and a small number of dedicated individuals have been active in feeding people in need and in organizing the effort into a sustainable resource in his community. A great deal of work is associated with this activity, and some skills are required. But the most important part is the commitment to making it happen. So without further delay, I introduce you to Niles Lavin and Food Not Bombs.
All right, my name is Niles Lavin. I'm 39, live in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area. I do a thing called Food Not Bombs. It started in the 80s. In California, and it, basically what we do is take food, vegetarian food that would otherwise go to waste from grocery stores, farmers markets, just individual people, and we cook a meal and serve it once a week in downtown Harrisburg for anyone who wants to come and eat. And this goes on, you know, there's basically every country in the world has one now. It's kind of a non-government affiliated, loose-knit group of like-minded individuals. There's no tax status. There's no sort of, you know, any, there's no tax IDs. There's nothing that you can write off in your tax. This stuff is all just people that are compassionate about, you know, helping other people the best of their ability. So, I mean, it gets to be very extensive. We have community gardens in Harrisburg. We have lots of big corporation grocery stores that donate us, you know, a plethora of food. We don't have any problems really with, you know, getting the food to give to people. But, you know, it's there's problems abound anyway.
Well, you have to have the vehicles and drivers to go get the food because I'm sure they are not delivering.
Amen. Yes. No, nobody delivers. Yes, we have to have vehicles to get the food. We have to get vehicles to bring the food downtown. We have to, you know, we started without this. We started just, you know, one person lived near where we would do it, and we kind of would just walk over there. But, you know, it's difficult to maintain that downtown district, you know, financial district of a city. Not everybody has an apartment down there all the time.
That particular location where you're at is still downtown at 2nd and Market Street near the bus terminal on Mondays.
On Mondays.
From 6 to 7 p.m. And folks come to depend on your Monday resource, don't they?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We are, you know, with rare exceptions, the only one serving a meal at that time, you know, a dinner meal. They have meals 5 days a week at noon at a church. But, you know, that's a heck of a time span there between noon and 6 p.m.
Right.
So, yeah, and, you know, there's actually vegetarian and vegan folks that live in the city, and they come specifically on Mondays for our meals because it's the best thing they can get. You know, the places have, you know, lunch meat and things sometimes, and it's just how can you get by on a bologna sandwich whenever you're a vegetarian, you know.
So is there any pushback from the local restaurants in the area or even the city itself?
Not really. I mean, we've had our run-ins with the city, but it was more just about shenanigans and people acting up down there. And, you know, we're not in a city that's it's kind of slow, and it never progresses Harrisburg as much as the, you know, kind of lost in time. Right. It's like a time capsule in space that, you know, everybody still looks up to the railroads. You know, we're in a place that's gentrifying at a very, very slow rate.
Okay.
And so, you know, the pushback could come in the future, but it has been now. We're not that big of an operation.
I guess they figure those folks don't have any money anyway, so who cares?
That's exactly
right?
The mindset.
Well, in my experience with trying to get people involved with stuff, if there's no money in it, they don't have any time for it. And that's the problem with the culture. They are so focused on the money.
True. My friend said to me the other day, if we could just focus on gathering enough money that we could literally give thousands of dollars away at these events, if we just give them money, You know, you can't give a guy on the street, you know, $20-$50 and expect him to go and make something of himself with that. You know, it's just you're not gonna give him anything but maybe some drug money or money for the day to eat.
Yeah, and it's just survival mode.
Exactly. If you can give someone $100 or more at a clip, you could actually help them to, you know, advance themselves in their lives in society. They could get a hotel room. They could buy a winter coat that is bigger and better than any winter coat they've ever owned. And, you know, then all of a sudden they feel good about themselves. And you know, you just have to maybe get that shimmer of hope in their life. And, of course, the odds of us being able to give out thousands of dollars at an event, you know, that's like geared towards the less homed community, it's not even possible. You know, especially you've got the old guard, and the old guard says, don't give them money, they're spending it on drugs. And we just give them, you know, food and clothing and, you know, just little accoutrements for survival. And I know personally that in Harrisburg, you give somebody a bag of accoutrements for survival, like, you know, toothpaste and deodorant and toothbrush, and you just put it all in the same bag, give one to each person, that bag will end up in the woods full of everything you gave them, just one or two items taken out of it. You know, give people bags of clothes, they're going to throw them in the woods. I've been down in the woods where the homeless camps are in Harrisburg and spent 5 or 6 hours with, I'm talking about teams, 50, 100 people. They've got bulldozers. They've got 50 to 100 dumpsters they rented for the day down there. And then in a couple of years, it's the same thing over again. I mean, I'm talking about 50 dumpsters full of garbage pulled from the woods, and it's all donation stuff, every single piece of it.
Wow.
Now, like at Food Not Bombs, what we do, we don't give out any sort of goodie bags. There's no, that went out with, you know, the 2010s.
Uh-huh.
And we give out things, just they all get set out. Everything gets set out on the table, and it's, you know, it's tampons, it's toothbrush, toothpaste, deodorant, just whatever we have at the time. It all goes out. You grab what you want. We don't play this game of here's what they can get. Here's a Christmas package. You know, you can't. You're just literally giving people trash. You're throwing your trash onto them, and it's just a sad state of affairs. And we'd like to gear towards giving people money. I would personally, you know, I'm not sure if it's such a Food Not Bombs idea or ideal. But, you know, just talking with my friend the other day about this whole situation, he's been involved with this for longer than me. He's with the churches, and they've got a lot more money. You know, they've got lots of cake to throw around. And we do not. You can't write anything off on your taxes when you give us money. When you give it to the church, oh, boy, you get all kinds of kickbacks.
Oh, is that right?
Well, I mean, in comparison, yeah.
I see the deduction allowances on the federal tax form continue to increase. And at the same time, it makes the price of obtaining the deduction higher. In other words, a single person on the average working scale income cannot afford to donate enough to benefit from the deduction.
$5,000.
And I don't know if you've noticed, but the term inflation is only half of the picture. Your money value has deflated, hence the reason that the cost of the item or service is inflated. So many more people just lost the ability to participate in the economic system. More people are going to be seeking assistance as a result. It's a failed system, and we keep repeating the same mistakes by turning to government to solve the problems. And they've created the problems to begin with.
Of course, it's true. And you know, the job market right now, it's very bizarre. And most places are offering a lot of money right now, but the fact that this inflation thing is happening is that their money isn't worth as much as it was.
Right.
And so, you know, of course, the whole system is faulty, and you've got the Bitcoin and the different cryptocurrencies, and they are just super unpredictable. They're thinking about doing that with the dollar. They want to make a version of it, you know, that's a cryptocurrency version. But, you know, I've been talking about this also for years, a system called a work credit system. And, you know, it's borderline, and I hate to say, you know, communism, but it's not really communism in the way that everybody works for the same wage, especially like, you know, less fortunate communities. Of course, this doesn't have to like be with specialized, you know, things like doctors, but everybody works for, say, right now with the way the system is going to be $25 an hour. and you build up these work credits, you know, and you have them, and you can save them up, and you can trade them in for cash. You can trade them for food. You can trade them. You can barter them for anything, you know. And it's just, and then of course, as time goes by, you would have to like look at the system and say, oh, okay, well, like money's not worth as much as it was a little bit ago, so now we have to up the ante on the work credit. And so then the work credit would be, like, let's say $30 then, you know.
Right.
And so anyway, it would be like you don't just need to have cash or like a card or like whatever, but you have like these work credits build up, you know. And nowadays, of course, it would probably be like on your phone, on an app or something. I'm not sure. This is just an idea that floats around. But, you know, it would really help for the homeless communities and people that are very much they're struggling on the streets. To just, you know, do things like I'm in the tree business and I always need some guys to come and help do some groundwork with chainsaws and, you know, dragging branches and do stuff. And I go down to the homeless camp, two big strong boys that are sober enough for the day to come on down and help me for $25 an hour to do, you know, and if I could implement my work credit system when I do that for them, that would really help them in so many ways. You know, if everybody could jump on board to a system like that, would be great. And of course, I do give them cash, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, sadly, they're like not insured, and you know, my bits or anything like that. I do this just for you know, it's just the right thing to do.
And this is a component that I actually wanted to talk to you about, and that being organizing folks in the homeless communities to participate in, and being a reliable resource in the tasks related to Food Not Bombs activities, such as food gathering, food storage, preparation, presentation, and even food growing.
It definitely is a possibility. And they have a camp down there that's immense. And it's like, you know, the electric company, they sold it to this guy that never developed it. And he's just sitting on this huge area. I don't know how many acres it is, but it's immense. It's forested, down by the railroad tracks and by PennDOT, Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. And he lets them there. Nobody ever gets, it's been over 10 years or more. Nobody gets hassled. That's just where they are.
Okay.
And so I have talked about this, and, you know, I've been down there to help with trash, cleanups and stuff. And we've never implemented this, but it's one of the best ideas there is to go down there and make a garden and just work it and work it and work it, and they'll witness the working of the garden in the community. And next thing you know, somebody's going to come at a curious cat and start learning. And then it takes off from there. I mean, so we have community gardens throughout the city. There's several different areas, uptown, downtown, Allison Hill. And so we've had real problems getting like the neighbors and people in the communities where these community gardens are happening to come and help to take care of them and tend to them. And, you know, it's been a real hassle for me and my crew, and we don't have the money to pay people to, you know, so it's mainly like community service guys. That's the backbone of my operation up here is the guys that are, you know, in trouble with the law, and they have 100 hours community service, whatever. And I bring them under my wing, and they're, you know, they're in the community garden, they're digging holes, they're in the kitchen, and they're cooking food. They're coming with me on strange missions to go and pick up, you know, 100 pounds of vegetables from some organic farm nearby. You know, I get them to do all these things, but you know, we can't pay them. And that's the problem. That's one of the biggest problems is that I can't pay the less fortunate people for their hard work with the system that we've created. And that's the way it should be. Yes, I'm paying them for chainsaws, but I mean, I'm getting paid $700-$900 to take this tree down. What's it to me to give them a few hundred of that, you know?
Right.
That's totally cool. But when we're doing this thing and it's all on compassion-based stuff, you know, and I pull these guys in and they're doing my community service, you know, I hate to say this, 9 out of 10 of them, they do their 100 hours, and then we never see them again.
Yeah, and they move on. They've got other things to do.
And they weren't getting paid for what they were doing. They were just getting their community services. So like, if the dream is, if they could get paid for all this stuff, if I could get enough donations from people for our nonprofit. We have a nonprofit. It's called Love Reforms Cooperative, and we created it because Food Not Bombs is not official. And as much as I hate to be official and deal with the government and give them, you know, a part of the take and have them know all about my business, we still did it because, you know, you have to sometimes placate.
Well, it seems that no matter how hard you work to make your goals become a reality, you have to create a mechanism to work with their failed system.
Exactly. You can't beat town hall from outside. You can't throw rocks at it. You got to go in. You got to know their language. You have
right.
They gave us the Webster's Dictionary and the Oxford Dictionary growing up. And they said, here's the language. Learn all these words. And then as soon as the government gets involved, the very second, anything, it's all from Black's Law Dictionary. None of it's from Webster's or Oxford. If you go into those rooms and you start talking Webster's or Oxford, you're going to get kicked out of there. You're going to get arrested.
Right. No, I understand. I have a Black's Law Dictionary, and I do look stuff up and make comparison as to what's actually being talked about. The population does not know about the communication barrier. They're not thinking they're using Black's Law Dictionary. The corrupted use of the language is getting worse every day, and when you try to communicate with government types, they're using an entirely different language.
That's why.
A new Black's Law Dictionary will cost you $180. You know, and furthermore, they're sold out of them right now. Look into 2023; they're sold out. You can't; it's back ordered. So that's great. The new lexicon of legal, you know, terminology. You can't even get it right now.
Well, isn't that convenient?
Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you can get an electronic version of it. I think it's $5,000.
Oh, outrageous!
Get these LexisNexis things and. There's a few of them. Westlaw, LexisNexis. There's some legal. It's like case law and different kinds of legal documents on these databases. You get them upgraded every year. It costs so much money extra. Right now, LexisNexis I think is $11,000. So you want to get up on your legal research and all your terminology and everything that's good in the league. It's going to cost you $11,000. And then it's going to cost you another $1,000 or $2,000 next year so you can update it.
Right. Well, you know, I'll just use my old version, and I'll struggle along, and then somebody can correct me when I get it wrong. How about that?
It's true. It's true. And the terms don't change much. You know, the new versions aren't much different than the old ones. You know, the only thing you're going to get with the $10,000 buy-in is the case law. Case law is very expensive to wade through anyway. But that's a whole other argument.
Well, that is a whole other argument. If they continue to base law decisions off of case law, then nothing will be solid. It will forever be fluid, no foundation. An old Indian once said, your law blows in the wind. It's always going to change, nothing concrete. You can't go to the foundation, which is the Constitution, but they won't go there.
It almost seems like this company, Shepherds, is creating the law, because whenever you do case law, you do what's called shepherdizing. You know, I went to school to be a paralegal, and okay. It's almost just for fun. I never did anything with it. I'm just a paralegal for fun. And so when you shepherdize something, literally the company has all the case law in a database. And that's how it began, is that you would have to go and use this system of this company that publishes these case laws, and you have to find the most recent one and make sure that's the one that set the precedent. So it would almost seem like Shepherds, the company, is making the law. They're the one documenting all of it, and they're the one giving it to us. How would we know if they weren't doing it?
Well, I guess we wouldn't. We'd have to have a team collecting data to find out what's going on.
Yeah, well, you know, there's court stenographers, and there's, you know, you've got records. It's very difficult to go around the whole country and wade through them, though. You know, you'd have to go to all of them. And even anyway, yeah. Back on track here, we started law reforms to get into the city halls and, you know, and speak with people and try to, you know, fix the broken food system, the food deserts, and so we take donations like in lieu of food not bombs. So anytime somebody, we're 501c3, you know, you went through all the madness and got the nonprofit status. We are a community building organization with the IRS. That's our, you know, title as a nonprofit. And,
well, let me ask you this. Did you have to get the nonprofit designation from the IRS just to collect food?
No, never. We never needed to collect food. Well, you know what? We did with big corporations. We sometimes do. Yeah. Okay. Some of them go around and they just give it to us. They go around the way their system works. Some of them give it to another nonprofit and then they give it to us. But yes, you're actually right about that. It's very difficult to get big corporations. We used to have Pizza Hut. We used to have Dunkin' Donuts. And what was the other one? Burger King, actually.
Okay.
They would give us food all the time, all kinds of stuff, right? And it was for about a year back in, like, 2010. And then, like, all three at the same time. I don't know if they're with the same corporation or whatever. They found out that we're not. They can't get any paperwork from us. They can't get any tax write-offs, nothing. So they cut us all off, right? And they said, no more. So a couple of the guys, they didn't care. And they went down to Dunkin' Donuts, a few more weeks to try to get the donation from the dumpster. And what they had done is they had taken the coffee grounds to all the coffee throughout the day, and they threw it on all the food in the trash bag.
Just to make sure that you could
not use
it.
Yeah, just to make sure we couldn't use the food. I mean, I'm talking about two or three giant garbage bags full of donuts and bagels, and they're made like the day of or the day before. I mean,
right.
It's not like these things. And, you know, they're in a clean bag. It's not like they take them and they get clean bags and they just throw the food all in these clean bags and throw it out there. It wasn't like we were trying to go and get horrible, you know, disgusting dumpster food, but they did that on purpose, yes.
Yeah, that's a sad thing.
That's part of what built up to me starting this nonprofit, just to funnel money, you know. I'm like laundering money.
And they force you to play their stupid game, and it's a stupid game. For whatever reason, I don't know, they want to go back, they want a tax write-off, or they want to be able to point the finger at somebody else later on down the road, or they want to beat their chest and say, look at the good thing I'm doing for my community. I guess it's a ploy to gain votes in the future. It's all about keeping their job. But most of it's hocus pocus.
I'm going to say most people do this for themselves. Most people that are down there helping us every week, you know, every other week, they've got something else going on in their life, and this is for them. But not to say that's a bad thing, you know. Wish more people would be like that, but, you know, everybody's just got to evolve down there and become more compassionate to the point where it's not for me. None of this is for me. I got years to find that one guy that wants a pickup truck, that wants every job he can get, that, you know, wants a new pair of work boots, and he's willing to destroy them in a year. You know, I want somebody that's on a boot allowance, and I can find a place for them, and it could be like my wingman. I'm trying to mentor somebody in something,
right,
and bring them out of that muck that they're in. And, you know, I always have a few guys that I'm pretty certain that they're going to be the one, but it doesn't work out like that, man. You know, drugs and alcohol are very prevalent in our society. And, you know, you'd be sleeping under a rock if you hadn't had somebody that has died or has fallen victim to the, you know, demon of it recently, you know? I mean, it happens constantly. And that's another huge problem that we could talk about another time is the drugs that, you know, pervade our communities.
The government acts like it's working to fix the drug abuse problem. But as I mentioned earlier, if there's no money involved for government benefit and no political advantage, they are not interested in getting to a solution. Look at it this way. There's been a plethora of government agencies engaged in combating the influx of drugs in the society. But as the days pass, the problem appears to be getting worse. The local police departments are struggling to keep up with the overdoses and the violence that accommodates the drug and alcohol feud disputes, but the agencies that demand the jurisdiction of combating the influx of the drugs gets larger in resources and manpower, but the problem expands exponentially. I'm thinking once again that government solutions to these problems are not the answer. It appears those government solutions are fueling the problem for their own benefit. Or looking at the result of government intervention from another direction, those solutions dehumanize the problems and demand a conformity that is out of sync with humanity.
Well, but the problem with fentanyl that's, you know, being manufactured by India, China, Mexico. No. They're really doing a bad thing, you know, because drug culture, there's, you know, many different kinds of, they say, narcotic drugs that people like to get involved with. And nowadays, there's no delineation between which is which. They all have fentanyl in them, everything. So if you want to do cocaine, you're risking dying of fentanyl overdose.
Exactly.
If you do heroin, you're risking dying of fentanyl. If you do ketamine, you might die of a fentanyl overdose. If you do any powder form drug, period, it doesn't matter what it is, PCP, anything, ecstasy, you might be ingesting fentanyl, the deadly heroin, you know, look-alike, and it's a very sad state of affairs. I mean, they invented that drug so that when people had open heart surgery, blood pressure wouldn't be affected by a anesthetic. And they, you know, invented for a good reason, but then, you know, just got out of control.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a sad state of affairs, and it just keeps happening. Like I said, no one's immune to this, especially in the United States of America. The heroin went out with the Afghanistan war.
Right.
Fentanyl came in shortly thereafter.
Well, I won't speculate as to who and what is behind all of that. There are a multitude of researchers already discussing it, and we could spend a great deal of time discussing it here ourselves. But as you said a moment ago, this is a topic for another discussion. So let's get back to food, not bombs. How did the kitchen refurbishment turn out? Have there been any improvements since I was there?
So we have two kitchens now.
Oh, is that right? Awesome.
We have one on Allison Hill at a church, and then we have, it's on 13th and Dairy Street, and then we have the one at the MCC Church of the Spirit uptown on Jefferson Street. And so we have events a lot more now. Like, we do a Thanksgiving Day holiday meal that's like a tofu turkey with all the fixings, and we set a table out right on the street, and we set chairs up around it. And the last 2 years, it's done very well. And like last year, we had 60 or 70 people come, and they were all mainly Spanish folks. I took Spanish in college last semester. I started speaking Spanish, so I actually had a really good time this year. I was able to talk to some of them.
Okay.
And they, you know, basically didn't have a Thanksgiving dinner planned. It's not traditional for them, you know. They're from Mexico.
Right.
And from, you know, Guatemala and Ecuador and all these kinds of things. And so they really enjoy the Thanksgiving meal. And the past 2 years, they've eaten all of our food. And I've made enough, you know, for 50 to 75 people.
Wow.
And then we do another one on Easter. And so, anyway, it's very nice. We have two kitchens. They're both, you know, technologically advanced, if you will. We're doing very good in the kitchen department.
Well, that's awesome, Niles. Excellent. I know you're working really hard to bring those kitchens into spec. So let's talk about your team. I know it takes a team to make this happen. We couldn't do this by ourselves.
Never. Well, maybe once. I did it once by myself.
Yeah, and that's all.
That was on Christmas Day. It's funny. It's almost Christmas. And on Christmas Day a few years back, there was about 3 feet of ice on the ground with another foot of snow on top. And basically everybody called me that day. It was Food Not Bombs Day. It happened to fall on a Monday, Christmas Day.
Okay.
So everybody called me. There's about four people that are diehards that are there every Monday. You know, besides me, there's five of us. And we're there every Monday without a fail. And so they all called me and they said, look, you know, we can't drive down there. This is impossible.
It's just too dangerous to go out today.
And so I had, you know, some resources and I had some containers, and I made 8 big old quart containers of soup. I made some soup, just a vegetable, nice hearty soup. And I had 8 containers that I could put some hot coffee in. You know, it was a reusable kind of container. And so I filled them all up, and I drove down there, and lo and behold, there's 3 guys waiting for me. So I give them their 3 soups and their coffees. Yeah. And then I sat there for a full hour until 7 p.m. And in that hour, 8 people came and took a soup and a coffee and walked off back into the ice and snow. It was incredible.
Wow.
Wow. And so that was the one time I had to do it by myself, but it worked, you know. It worked perfectly. It was an algorithm. You know, it's funny because they sell us about algorithms on the, you know, electronic, well, there's real algorithms in life.
This is a human algorithm.
But, you know, yeah, there's these rhythms. There's these things that just go on as you exist in life. And you just have to pay attention to them a little bit more, you know. And you can kind of, you can see through the mist to the real, you know, thing, the real McCoy. And you get a better feeling in life, man.
Right. Yeah, yeah, I know what you're saying. There's a saying in the Bible, the Lord will not give you more than you can handle. So on that day, the task seemed overwhelming. You really didn't want to pull it together and provide for people that may not even show up, but you did.
That was the least we've ever had. I've never been that little of people down there. We got quite a following. You know? I mean, at times there's 100 people. You know, and that's a pretty nice thing, you know, that you get 100 people come down and eat your vegetarian meal. You know, and probably half of them otherwise wouldn't have had a meal because of the, you know, situation that they're in.
You know, I took a look at the Food Not Bombs website, and there are many, many organizations throughout the world. And some are active, most are active, and some are dormant. But the reason that they are vegan is that the meat and the dairy products are prone to spoiling, and it's hard to store them.
It's understood, too. I mean, how about this? We've seen it before around Christmas. Funny thing, we say this. Guys are down at the camp, and they're giving people down there literally rotten meat. I have seen it, yes. Green hues on, I mean, I'm talking about some nasty-looking stuff. And it's basically, it's not healthy. And the reality is that we live in a day and age where we have figured out how to eat a healthy, you know, complete diet without any meat at all.
Right.
And we've got it down. People are not walking around like zombies that are your vegan friends anymore, you know, if they were even. And so, you know, people don't just eat like crackers and, you know, cans of corn when they're a vegan. They have a very diverse and, you know, healthy diet that has all the proper, you know, the only thing that you get from meat that you can't get from vegetables is B12. That's it. It's the B vitamins, you know, and that's it. Everything else you can get from nature. Now, of course, they have ways of kind of making the B vitamins in like a laboratory so that vegans and vegetarians can ingest it without it being sourced from animals. But the fact remains that, you know, part of the deal is that we, like I said, we're a vegetarian or vegan organization. And, you know, I understand that it came from that, but it's evolved, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you guys use rice?
Oh, yeah, we have rice every week. There's diehard rice people that they come and they just want rice.
Well, rice is a staple over in Asia, and I guess it's got protein in it. I'm not sure, but I use it regularly.
It's definitely healthy, and, you know, it's not one of the things. I'm told that there's a couple things that you can live off of alone and survive, and it's like honey. And, you know, there's not many things that one powerhouse of nutrition.
Is rice one of them?
I'm not sure rice is one of them, but, you know, it's like bread. You could sustain, or potatoes, you could sustain pretty darn well. Look at the Irish.
Well, yeah. Look at the European countries. Ukraine, Poland, Russia, Czechoslovakia, Ireland. They were all pretty dependent on the potato and cabbage for a very long time.
We have a organic farm around here that we linked up with about 2 years ago. And some friends of mine, just from community gardening and from working at the farmer's market. And, like, we have our nonprofit has a stand at the farmer's market. And, well, we didn't last year, but we did the 2 years before that. I met a lot of people. And so they donate to us, like they're very exotic in their vegetables. And we get some really, you know, like mustard greens and kohlrabi and just very bizarre, like leeks and just things you wouldn't expect, you know, scallions and shallots. And just we have just like there's lots of vegetables all the time. They're doing winter grows up there. They got cold frames and hoop houses. And so it doesn't stop now. Now, I mean, we just got a donation last week that was, you know, like cabbages, broccoli, and all kinds of stuff. And it's, you know, December 20-something.
And it's grown local, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's only about 15 miles. It's 15 to 20 miles from where we cook the stuff, you know. And they deliver it, actually, now that you mentioned, you were saying earlier. Now, of course, this is a local, non-profit, organic farm that runs out of the farmer's market. Now, they deliver the stuff to us, and they don't want any tax write-offs or anything. Hell, they're happy to give us whatever they can.
You have some conscious folks that wish to see the resource used rather than see it thrown out in the compost bin or the dumpster.
They're our best right now. They're our best. And you know what? I hate to say this on this interview, but... Of course, I just want to show the complexity of human relationships within our organizations and without. That okay, so Bob and Amy, they are the diehards. They came on board about 2011 or 12, and they are a couple, in their 50s, and they are there every Monday. Their whole life revolves around this.
Okay.
So they have some place they get donations that are kind of corporate, like the Giant Food Center, the Giant Food Market.
Mm-hmm.
So they go down to Giant, they get the food, and they go to this real fancy one. There's always organic food there, and it's kind of an uppity place. It's in a Jewish community, not that that means anything, but anyway, they go to get the donation every week, and they shop in the grocery store. They're vegans. They go get their nice fancy stuff at their nice fancy grocery store. Anyway, Bob likes to wear offensive political T-shirts, you know, just about like we don't want to pay our taxes kind of stuff.
Right.
So anyway, he's in a Giant and he's walking around a store and some customer in the store basically is offended by Bob's T-shirt. So they get into it and they're getting a little bit loud. And next thing you know, there is a employee an aisle over stocking the shelves or whatever. He hears all this. And apparently this is the straw that broke the camel's back in his political, career or whatever. He starts flipping out and screaming about F you liberals and you people are going to ruin this country and blah, blah, blah. It's a heated battle between three
people
inside the store. It gets so bad, this guy starts getting violent. The employee.
The employee's getting violent.
The employee. So he quits right there on the spot. Managers have to eject everybody. So basically, we're now banned from that giant. So no more fancy hoity-toity vegetables and good, baked goods and things. We're now kicked down to the Enola Giant, which is kind of, lowbrow.
Right. Well, here's the thing. The T-shirt guy should have let the guy say his piece and then let it go.
We have a First Amendment right to say whatever we want in this country. Just let people say what they want. Just make sure they don't have intention behind it. If it's really negative, then they're, and then you just go, that's all.
Well, people have their minds made up. And we know that these made up minds do not have all the facts. Most of it is reactionary or a regurgitation of the nonsense they've been exposed to in the media, or that's what's going on in their closed circles. If you don't have a solid and effective way to influence a person's thinking in a situation like that, you're wasting your time engaging in an argument, or you're looking for a fight.
I agree. So anyway, of course I wasn't there. This is all just coming from me third-hand information, but... Like I said, the complexity of relationships, and of course, teamwork. Yes, I kind of just mentioned it in both those little spiels. Bob and Amy are our go-to, and of course, I'm the guy that is just the face of the thing almost. I'm in charge of promotions. I'm in charge of throwing the concerts. We have a concert every year at the Reservoir Park in Harrisburg,
which is a huge
park. It's at the Civil War Museum. And it is the city's water source. There's a big reservoir up there. But anyway, it's a hill, and there's the most beautiful views of the city of Harrisburg you've ever seen in your life up there. And we have about, maybe anywhere from, 6 to 10 bands play. And it's all day from, 11 a.m. until 9 or 10, until whenever they kick us out of there. And we have a great time. The kids come down from the community. It's in a kind of less fortunate area of town, and one year there was 25 kids up there dancing to MC Hammer or whatever it was, and it was really cool. they all ate food, and of course all the kids come and just raid the candy and run off, and the candy's gone the first hour. But it's a great time, and like I said, we do it every year. It's called the Food Bombing, Food Not Bombs, Food Bombing on the Lawn. We just had our fifth annual one, but of course that takes a lot more people than just our regular old Monday. Sure. Five people, you know, it takes five people on Mondays, but so you know, every year you got to get this thing together, and I need 20 people to help me. You know, it's a full soundboard too. I mean, we have a full soundboard, we have a PA system, we have about $10,000 in sound equipment, and so, you know, we started wanting a sound guy. That was too expensive. Next thing you know, me and my friend Tyler were the sound guys.
You couldn't get a sound guy to volunteer?
Nope. Well, there's one guy that I guarantee if we gave him enough time, he would do it for us for free.
Okay.
Of course, we'll pay him. Whoever the sound guys, we're not wanting it for free. We'll just pay what we can. It's like a couple hundred bucks. And that's not enough for somebody to sit 8 hours at a soundboard and make it sound good. So we just do it ourselves now, and which is great because now I know how to do sound.
Well, yeah, you have to learn stuff along the way.
Yeah, it's a DIY world. If you want to survive in this country, in this society, in this world, you have to do it yourself.
Yeah, that's my philosophy.
If you don't do it yourself, then literally you're just a slave, and I hate to use the term, to the system, to everyone's information.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, it's like, oh, well, you're going to have to go and purchase that, or you're going to have to go have this person fix that because you haven't done the legwork to get all the information. It's all out there. It's all there.
It's all been learned. You just have to find a way to get the information and apply it.
You know, I'm a full-time student in college, so I have access to the libraries,
mm-hmm.
all the college libraries, at least in the state of Pennsylvania. When I go in and or go on the internet and I go on any sort of database, I have access to all the colleges in Pennsylvania's database. It's for everything. I can go down to the library at Millersville, and I can say, I need this book. And they'll look and see if any university, private or public, in the state of Pennsylvania has that book in their library. If they do, they will send it to me, or if it's close enough, they'll drive it over. And I'll have my hands on it instantly. Listen to this. There's this new thing out there. It's not just college students. It's at all my public libraries. And I belong to, like, you know, four county libraries in my area here.
Mm-hmm.
It's called the Interlibrary Loan System. And that's similar to what I was just saying, but interlibrary loan system is like the whole country. It's all libraries in the library system. You, whatever book you want, you could think this book doesn't even exist anymore, that it's out of print, it's a rare, you might get it, because every library in the country, you got odds that are in your favor of getting your hands on that book or that information. There's another system, it's called Easy Borrow. And that's, yeah. Interlibrary Loan and Easy Borrow. They're both two of these new systems, the library systems, where you can basically get your hands on any piece of information that your heart's desired. I mean, obviously, some of it is a secret, proprietary stuff. You're not going to find out what Coca-Cola's, you know, secret recipe is. You're not going to find out how Tesla, you know, his car was all hooked up to go fast and be crazy. But, you know, you will get very many places with the library. You know, and I've always been a huge fan of libraries. It's just, I always spend time there. You know, it's not something that I would let fly by me, you know. We were going to start, and it's in the works, a zine through the nonprofit. Because through the nonprofit, we get, like, free mailings with the Postal Service. That's another reason I wanted to do this.
Okay.
Is that you get free postage, right? You can send out so many hundred, you know, like, little pamphlets or whatever to, like, so many addresses every year. I think it's every quarter. And so we're gonna start a little zine, and it's called, we're not really sure yet. We wanted to call it Free Lunch, but I wanted to call it DIY AF. And if you want to know what the F stands for, it's freak. But what it is basically just like a, you know, self-published magazine that is do-it-yourself tidbits, you know, everything from how to make a bookshelf, how to, like, clean your intake manifold out of your pickup truck, how to, you know, how to sharpen your knives, how to, like, how to do all this, how to do the trap on your sink, you know, it gets clogged up or whatever, it's rusted out, you got to clean the trap out, you got to put a new one in, you know, everything. I'm talking about everything you can imagine, you know, and it's not just going to be for the guy that's a homeowner and the truck owner. It's going to be for the guy that's living, how to make maple syrup, how to do gardening things, how to just everything you need to survive, survival 101. And, of course, you know, we'll get cultural with it. There'll be art. There'll be all kinds of things. But you just look out for it. It will be coming to you soon. And I'll even send some to Alaska, you know. Free mail. I mean, that's just like that's the tip of the iceberg. It's amazing.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. I could make some time to contribute. You know, I spent a great deal of time in this past 2.5 years learning new processes. And I've had to re-educate myself about many aspects of the Associate's Applied Science degree. For example, I had to get back into building electronic circuits. And from that, I learned KiCad, which is an open source circuit board development program. And it took several of those designs to manufacture. I'm still building the house. I have always done most of the work with my own hands. And it's been a rare instance that I've had to hire someone to do the work for me. Well, but there has been a few jobs, like drilling a well, installing a septic system, replacing a well pump, and trimming tree limbs, things like that. I've never had to call a plumber or an electrician. I've learned how to do it myself.
Amen. I'm the same way. Never anybody work on my car. You know, they put the stickers on there. That's about it.
In my experience with vehicle inspection back there in Pennsylvania, you take your car into the shop, and when you get it back, it's got a whole new set of problems.
I know a couple guys, but I've been through that before. I had these gentlemen that help me out now. You know, they're very cool, and they know that I'm a mechanic. You know, that this is a... Anyway, it's funny because I've been doing some DIY stuff. Like, I do tree work, and, you know, I got all this lumber, and I got all these parts of trees, and, you know, I'm not taking this stuff. I'm not chipping it and taking it down to a dump site. I'm taking the logs. 6 to 10, 12, 16 feet, and I'm putting them on my pickup truck. I'm getting them up there, and I'm driving them down to the mill, and I'm getting them milled, and then I'm stacking them, and I'm stickering them, and I've got lumber for days. I got 5 kind of lumber right now laying out. And so what happened is we got some logs that are too big. We can't do anything with these things, you know. We got this cherry tree in my brother-in-law's yard. It's 46 inches in diameter, and then it's like 22 feet long. So what we did is we bought an Alaska mill.
Did you really? You bought an Alaska chainsaw mill?
Yeah, we bought an Alaska mill, and we borrowed my brother-in-law's father's chainsaw that's a steel 661, mm-hmm. And we put a 36-inch bar and chain on it. We put it in this Alaska mill. We shaved off this this log so we could fit the mill on there. And, baby, we got planks, cherry wood. And neither of us have any clue what we're doing. Yeah, I know how to run a chainsaw. I'm a tree guy. But, you know, this is a whole new level of this, man. I'm used to taking them down to the mill. So now we've got this DIY resource that's just, you know how much it saves me, too, that I don't have to drive these logs down in the mill. The mill's 20 miles, 25 miles away from me. And it's all back country roads. It's not like a highway 25. It takes about 35, 40 minutes to get there.
Okay.
We're talking 2,000 pound of logs on my truck. So anyway, it just goes to show that start doing stuff yourself, man, you can really change the game.
I used to own a mill, and I'm kicking myself now for selling it. It was a mobile dimensional mill, and it kept the guy busy, I'll tell you what.
Nowadays, wood is so expensive that if you go, you can go and get a live-edge pine board from Home Depot or Lowe's. Mm-hmm. It's like $150. I'm talking about like $30 a board foot for a piece of pine. You can get contracts with the federal and state governments to go out into federal and state forests and cut the trees and keep them. You know that.
Here in Alaska, you can get a permit and go cut timber for personal use.
What I mean. That's exactly what I'm talking about. It's the same kind of thing. You can do it in Pennsylvania, too. You can get contracts with the game lands, the state game lands, mm-hmm. And they have huge sections of that you can go into and cut it for your personal use. Just take it out of there. I mean, how much is it going to cost for your little dinky state permit? Not much compared. You got to go down to Home Depot and spend thousands on how much their lumber costs. I mean, and everything's going up. We just bought a house in Harrisburg, and actually a very, very poor community.
Mm-hmm.
It's Allison Hill. It's on the top of Allison Hill on Bear Street called Berry Hill Street. And there are these homes. They're like 20 in a row. They're made of brick. They're row homes. Anyway, we're going right down to ground zero. And there's a community garden across the street that our friend Kenyatta runs. And it's called the Berry Hill Street Community Garden. He's got his own nonprofit going. And he's a buddy of ours. We've got a couple of those little connections going on in the city. We've got a good little city going of folks. You know, grassroots, community-based, gardening people. And it's great because he said to us, oh, you guys are the best. You know, now I've got security at the garden. And I said, I love you, Kenyatta. That's great because it's true. He knows we're going to be over there more. We're going to be in our yard. And, you know, this is a great asset to us, too, that we're there and that garden's there. We're going to start doing a Saturday morning, like, Food Not Bomb spinoff, which is going to be like pancakes or something, you know. And we're going to do it over at the community garden. And with any luck, people are going to come for the pancakes. This is when spring comes, after we move in this winter. And they're going to eat the pancakes. They're going to see the beautiful garden there. And they're going to know it needs work. It needs help. And they're the neighbors. And bam, food brings people together. And now we can help create the food, you know. So I've got lots of optimistic hope for this one. I've never... Yeah, I've been operating, I hate to say this, but outside of the city all these years, you know, for 10 years or more.
The city's just not interested.
Well, I know. And I've been doing it from, you know, outside the fishbowl. I come in and I do my work and then I leave. And now it's going to change that dimension. We're going to be there. So me and Arian, my girlfriend, we're moving right in to the neighborhoods. And so I think our presence might just in and of itself help to spark, like, you know, a revolution of gardening. Still over here, just in this place is a compound. It's like an eighth of an acre, and there's about 30 different kinds of food plants, you know, perennial ones even. I mean, if you came down and looked at what I can do to an eighth of an acre or a 16th of an acre, I mean, this is so tiny. Make your head spin what I've got going on here. The backyard, there's not one blade of grass at all. It doesn't exist back here. It's all turned into food forest.
Grass is a waste of time.
People in California watering their grass. I can't even believe it. It's absolute. There's no Colorado River anymore. They're watering their grass.
Well, let's wrap this up. It's been an hour already.
Yes, great.
Send me a picture of your 16th of an acre garden.
I will. I'll get you a bunch. I have them in all seasons too. You know, I've got it when it's because I've got. But there's angles to it, you know. You got to go around the house. There's different sections of what's going on back here. But I definitely will get you some posts. Maybe put them on your website. That would be cool.
Sweet. Hey, I'll make sure you get a copy of this. And how about we plan on doing this again, okay?
Yeah, it's great. Let's do it. I can play this in its entirety on WIXQ, The Ville, Millersville University Radio.
Okay.
Because I'll be getting... a 3-hour segment once a week starting January, like somewhere around the 17th. And I'll be doing that same 3-hour time slot once a week till I'm graduated from that college.
All right, Niles, thank you so much. And that was our guest, Niles Levin, Food Not Bombs in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.